Hi, everybody. I'm Bailey.
I'm Drew.
I'm Lacey.
And we are sorry.
We're sorry.
No. I stumbled in my mouth. We're sarcastic, so let's get sinister. Something happened with my tongue and my teeth, and they weren't working.
My tongue and my teeth. We should start, like, instead of just like jumping into a recording, we should start with the tongue of the tip of the tongue, the teeth, the lips.
Teeth, the lips.
You
can't say no, or it's die. Are we just hopping right in? Does anyone have any tidbits to share?
No. I would like a brief reminder of where we left off.
Absolutely. Yeah. I have a full paragraph.
I do
paragraph.
Remember with Ted Bundy.
I have a full paragraph. It's going to be fine.
I got a haircut today.
Looks lovely.
Thank you.
If anyone wants to see, you can subscribe to be a Patreon and watch our videos. We're sometimes funny.
Still a
and
thing
we make faces. This is like my new tradition. Every Thanksgiving I chop off my hair.
Nice.
I did it
last November day. 6th.
Okay, well, when's the next holiday, Dale?
I mean, election day was yesterday.
Okay, well, that's past. I wanted to tell you guys, I saw a TikTok where they said that like a new trend for 2025, like naming baby girls, is naming your baby girl after your best friend's dad.
I saw that, and I commented on the video I saw, and I was like, I'm gonna have to tell my best friend that her daughter's name's gonna be Sheldon. So,
yeah. So my daughter is gonna be Sheldon.
Shelly.
Lacey's daughter is probably gonna be Michael.
I'm gonna have a Mike. Yeah.
And then
Michelle.
Bailey. Who's a... No. Ooh. It's not the female version of the man's name.
It's
just the male's name.
We'll call
like,
her
the video,
Michelle.
They
just
were
tell
like...
her when she's older.
They were saying how, like, I forget the examples they used. One got... I think one was, like...
I saw one that said Kirby.
Kirby. Lacey, I sent you the video.
Yeah.
Anyway, mine would be John, then.
Oh. Huh.
So we've
Which
all got something to think about.
Isn't so on my list, so.
For a girl?
Yeah, it's not on my list. Well, it's not on my list at all.
Oh, I thought you said it was on your list.
It is now.
No, it's not.
Well, it should be based on what they're predicting for 2025 trends.
I love Becca, but no.
I feel like the only one that would work would be Michael.
I like Shelly.
It's not the feminine version of the name.
No, I'm not saying that's like her name, but that's like what her nickname would be.
Yeah.
And then she could go to school and be like, what's Shelly like long for? Sheldon.
And then don't answer any questions about it.
Yeah, there's no more.
Like,
there's no need.
How Meg from Family Guy is like. I
think it's Megan.
Yeah, but it's like.
Megatron.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all I have. As far as updates.
Let's get into it.
All right,
as I was writing up this part two of Ted Bundy, I realized that we're in the year 2024, that makes it 50 years from when Ted Bundy started his killing spree. Kind of a terrible anniversary, but
an anniversary nonetheless.
But it's also a bright side because, like, if you think about it, I guess he changed law enforcement a little bit and how they looked at information together.
Oh, I was going to say they don't let prisoners just wander around courthouses with open
That's
windows.
not what happened. That is not what happened.
Was he in the bathroom or something? He climbed out
we're
of a window.
We're gonna get to it.
Sorry.
But stop it.
Sorry.
So last episode we covered Ted's childhood, how he didn't really have that troubling of a childhood. It just seemed like he was disturbed or strange.
He was lied to.
Well,
he was made to think that his mom was his sister.
Yeah, but like it wasn't like he was abused or anything.
All right.
We've seen worse childhoods on the show. The show.
It's nevertheless, not a competition.
He still would like torture animals. He started peeping in windows at a young age. And specifically, he liked to make like bear traps with like holes in the ground with wooden stakes pointing up, and then cover it with leaves and twigs. And a little girl actually fell in one before. So,
but he's also saved like 20 people from drowning. So I think that offsets all the bad stuff.
It was two, and debatable.
No, I feel like he's just like lurking around a lake, waiting for people to start drowning.
And then last time we also got into the beginning of his murderous rampage, where he pretty much was claiming a victim each month, starting in February 1974, up until June, when he took two women 10 days apart. And, just another little refresher, his victims, Linda Healy, Donna Manson, Susan Rancourt, Kathy Parks, and Brenda Ball, and Georgianne Hawkins were all reported missing, but their remains have yet to be found. And just so everyone remembers, we're currently in the like Seattle area, except I believe it was Kathy Parks was actually taken from Oregon, so he's already crossed state lines in kidnappings. Are we ready?
Ready.
As you guys ready. Aren't paying attention.
Yes.
Okay. So we're going to start. We're still in Seattle. We're going to start at Lake Sammamish State Park in Kings County, Washington. Lake Sammamish State Park offers two swimming beaches and like hiking trails. And on July 14th, 1974, they were hosting their annual picnic. So a lot of people were in the park. It's also July in Washington, so it's probably gorgeous. Janice Ann Ott was born February 14th, 1951. She was 23 years old. Judy, do you get the updated PowerPoint?
I think so. What is this?
That's all six of the victims from the first part. Keep going. There you go. So Jan had been married to her husband, James, since 71 and was working as a probation caseworker in King County, in the King County Juvenile Court. She was hanging at the beach for the day when she was seen talking to a young man wearing a white tennis outfit, and his arm was in a sling. She was seen leaving with him and never seen again. Ted kidnapped her, took her about 2 miles away to a predetermined location, and he claimed that he stayed with her for approximately 4 hours, sexually assaulting her. Then he went back to the lake and found Denise Nesland. She was born October 10th, 1955, making her 19. She was studying to be a computer programmer, and she was at the lake with her boyfriend and another couple when she just headed to the bathroom and then got stopped by Ted and was brought back right to where Janice was. Bundy later said, at this point in the interviews, he's like talking in third person, sort of. To be cautious, he would have probably killed the first victim before leaving to get the second girl, but in this instance, since we agreed he wasn't acting cautiously, he hadn't killed the first girl when he abducted the second. So he pretty much was saying that he, when he was done with Jan, went to go get Denise, or just a random girl, brought Denise back to the same location, assaulted Denise in front of Jan, and then murdered the both of them.
So, sorry, where did he get them? Where did he pick them up?
Lake Sammamish.
Oh, so he is lurking around lakes.
Yeah.
He's a lake lurker.
And this is the first time he would kill two women in the same day, but also just, like, literally hours apart from the same place, too. So it's pretty brazen. Other witnesses would say that they saw a white male calling himself Ted approach different women with a castor sling on his arm and asking for help with unloading his sailboat from his car. Witnesses also identified a light tan VW bug. And out of the four women that he had tried luring, one of them went to his car with him, but then discovered that there was no sailboat and got away.
Yeah, that's, like, a hard thing to lie about.
Yeah.
Also, like, why? He just needs one woman to come and help him with a sailboat?
Yeah, apparently.
No, I'm not buying.
I feel like, because, like, and before he had, like, used that, like... He'd, like, use the sling as, like, a ruse, and, like, that time before it was like, oh, can you help me bring my books to my car? That one's a little bit more believable, but the sailboat is, like...
Yeah.
Well, can you help me bring my books to the lake? Doesn't...
No, he was on a college campus with the books.
Right, but, like, he what had to need... do something for the setting.
Some people like reading or studying on the lake.
Maybe he was trying to brag too. Oh, I have a sailboat.
Probably. Prior to this, the police were all working separately in different jurisdictions. When Denise and Jan went missing, especially in the matter of hours, and witness statements said they were, like, seen talking to the same man, a task force was finally created. It was between the Seattle and the King County police forces, and they started this to suspect that at least Susan Rancourt's disappearance, who's the girl that, as I like was just saying, she got taken on college campus by a library with a guy saying that he needed help getting books to his car. They started to think that her case was linked to Jan and Denise as well, because of the similarities of, like, the sling and needing assistance by his car. The police took all photos taken at the park that day, like, from all the witnesses and people there, and they obtained about 1,000 tips / leads in the first 2 weeks of their investigation. So they had a lot of information to go through. At this point, a rough depiction of Ted went out to the media, which got the attention of Liz, his girlfriend. She had reached out to the tip line, concerned for some strange behavior from her boyfriend, and multiple times her tips and concerns went unanswered or ignored.
So she called multiple times?
Yeah.
Imagine being so that concerned about your significant other that you call the police multiple times.
Yeah. And she, like, this is the first time she would, like, start to, like, call or, like, see weird behavior, but she stayed with him. Yeah. So I don't.
That's the other thing, like, she was that concerned, but she also was like, meh.
Yeah. I think I mentioned it in the beginning, too, she was a single mom. Like, she, like, her daughter was around Ted. They had a very serious relationship. Like, they were, like, gonna get engaged or married at one point. Like,
meanwhile, she's calling the police on him.
Yeah. So the specific strange behaviors that she started to notice was, which, let me know if any of these, like, jump out to you guys. So first, he had a meat cleaver in his desk.
Weird place.
Not everybody is blessed to the kitchen.
Having the meat cleaver is not weird.
Yeah. And to be fair, you know, there's a TikTok of a girl, or I think it's somebody in college, but they have like a lot of like tabletop, like kitchen stuff.
Yeah,
like so they literally cook while they're in bed. So I mean, you need to tenderize the meat.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then she found a surgical glove in his coat pocket.
Everybody's got one of those.
He left it there after surgery.
He
don't worry about it.
Is not a doctor.
I have like 10 surgical gloves somewhere.
Okay. Just a refresher. Ted was studying psychology.
That's a science.
Right. She also thought it was strange that he drove hundreds of miles to Colorado one night to distress from work.
Colorado's a beautiful place. I've never even been there, and I can tell you that I would drive to Colorado to de-stress.
In one night?
Not from, like, where I am right now, but if I lived, you know, a little closer, like, wherever Tiffany was.
I'd like to say, to respond to the one-night comment, you want to make sure that you're there for the sunrise over those mountains in Colorado, and really beautiful.
Makes you appreciate life. Sometimes life is about seizing the moment.
Yeah, yeah. Bailey.
Drive a little.
You need to get out more.
I just want to say Colorado's at least 1,000 miles away from Seattle.
Okay.
You really want to see those mountains so bad.
Right with the sunrise. It's okay, very romantic.
I'm just pointing out both sides.
It is a little further than I thought it was.
Are but... you?
You guys got the one side, I got the other. It's fine. So she also would like confront him and be like, what is going on? Like, why are you driving across the country? Also, why do you have kitchen utensils in your desk? And he would use his intelligence and charm to just talk his way out of it.
Oh, I thought you were going to give us like an example. He would use his intelligence to explain how.
No, I don't have that specific
efficiency
stuff.
Is key.
Yeah. But in the end, the police just looked like, seeing Ted on paper, he didn't look like a killer to them or evil. Like, he was a clean-cut, normal, decent college guy that just didn't have a prior record and didn't seem like he would do this. So they kind of pushed that tip off to the side. But as I said, Liz and Ted stayed together, but they slowly grew distant. Good. And eventually Ted moved for law school. So in February 1974, Ted left Seattle and moved to Salt Lake City, Utah, and enrolled in the University of Utah Law School. Back in Seattle in September, a hunter discovered the remains of Jan and Denise. They were 1 mile east of an old railroad trestle, just outside Issaquah, Washington. They were skeletal remains, also among the remains, a femur and several vertebrae were found that didn't belong to either of them.
I love that.
It was believed that those remains belonged to Georgianne Hawkins, his like victim before these two. So back in Utah, Ted's like really like he's finding himself, he's doing things. Do you think like what do you guys predict for Ted? Do you think he's like turning a corner and like leaving all this behind, or do you think that like
it seemed like he was really on a roll?
Yeah, I mean, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Like,
exactly.
It seemed like everything was going well, so why?
You're correct. He continued, if not got worse and faster.
Well, Nancy, yeah. I mean, how much faster can you be, though, with Jan and Denise being hours apart?
We're going to find out, I think.
Yeah. So, Nancy Wilcox was 16 years old. October 2nd, 1974, in Holiday, Utah. She left her home to buy a pack of gum and was last seen riding in a yellow VW Beetle. She was never seen again. I don't really have any other information about her disappearance, unfortunately. Then, on the 18th of 1974, Melissa Smith was a 17-year-old daughter of a Utah police chief. She had left around 9:30. Hold on. Oh, I don't have where she left from. Okay. She was walking home from somewhere at around like 9:30 p.m., but never made it home. She was abducted, sodomized, raped, and strangled in Midville, Utah. Her body was... This is Melissa Smith.
Okay. Her.
She's the 17-year-old daughter of a Utah police chief. She was found a week later. Her body was nude and was found by a deer hunter on a hillside in Summit Park, Utah, on October 27th. There were multiple brain hemorrhages after suffering blows to the head. Her stockings were also found around her neck. The official cause of death was ruled multiple head injuries with bilateral subdural hemorrhage and a skull fracture and strangulation. Interestingly enough, she's believed to be held for days after she disappeared, not killed initially. So she was taken on the 18th of October. On Halloween, he ran into Laura and Amy. She was 17. She was attending a Halloween party on October 31st, obviously. Went missing from Leah, Utah. After midnight on Halloween, going into November 1st, she left and tried to hitchhike home. She wasn't found until Thanksgiving Day in the Wissahatch Mountains, lying dead by a river. Her nude body was found by hikers in the she had been beaten about the face with a crowbar, raped and sodomized. Her face was beaten beyond recognition. She was also found, like, appearing to be strangled by her stockings. Her official cause of death was multiple head injuries with a depressed fracture of her skull and strangulation. She was also believed to have died the week prior, meaning she was held captive for a while as well. Oof. So that was his October. Mm-hmm. Next, we're going to go into November.
Oh, Jesus.
So this is all going to happen on the same day.
Okay.
So November 8th, Carol DeRoche was an 18-year-old woman. She was shopping at the Fashion Place Mall in Murray, Utah, when Bundy approached her. He was posing as a police officer. He told her that someone had tried to break into her car and she needed to come down to the police station to file a report. She agreed to go and quickly felt something was wrong. She and him got in the car and was starting to drive off when he pulled over and tried to handcuff her. He accidentally, I guess there was a fight or something, because he accidentally cuffed both on one wrist, and she was able to escape from his car.
A little embarrassing.
A little bit. That evening at Viewmont High School, there was a school play going on, and the director was approached by a man who asked for her assistance in identifying a car. But she was too busy, so she refused. A little while later, he reapproached her again, and she refused again. At the same play at that high school, Deborah Kent was there with her parents. Deborah was a 17-year-old student, and she was watching the high school play when she had to leave early to pick up her brother from a roller skating rink. At 10:15 p.m., November 8th, same day, she left the school to go to her parents' car with the keys, but the car never left the parking lot. When they discovered that, the police found a small handcuff key in the parking lot, and they would later discover that the key was a perfect match to DeRoche's handcuffs that Bundy cuffed on her. In December of 1974, Liz, who's back in Seattle, but still kind of, like, together with Bundy, but obviously they're, like, long distance at this point, was starting to see the trend of women disappearing around Salt Lake City. She realized that the women were disappearing wherever he went, and she reported him again to the police.
I love again, that she noticed it, but the police didn't.
Yeah. Again, nothing really, like, came up with that. Came from that. Sorry, let me breathe. Can you go to the next picture?
Yeah.
How would you say her first name?
Karen.
Karen? Okay, that's what I thought. Karen Aline Campbell was a 23-year-old registered nurse living in Dearborn, Michigan. In January of 1975, her fiancé, his two children, and her took a trip to Colorado. Her fiancé was a doctor, and he was attending a seminar. They were staying in the Wildwood Inn in Snow Mass, Colorado. On January 12th, she separated from the kids and her fiancé to run up to the room to grab something real quick, but she never made it to the room. A month later, a recreational worker found her nude body lying a short distance from the road, and animals have started ravaging her body, and take a break, Bailey. Jesus Christ. And it appeared that she suffered multiple blows to her head. In March 1st of 1975, Healy, Rancourt, Parks, and Ball's remains were all found on Taylor Mountain back in Seattle. These were his first victims. It took them over a year to find them. At this point, they were all skeletal remains, and it was pretty clear that their deaths were from severe blunt force trauma. Linda Healy's skull was found battered, along with the other three, and their remains were ravaged by wildlife. For instance, coyotes, foxes, mice, and birds. And just a reminder, Parks was abducted in Oregon, and Bundy later said that he assaulted her in Oregon, then drove her up to Seattle at Taylor Mountain, and then killed her there. Excuse me.
I don't know. That's far.
Yeah.
It's a good way to cover your tracks, I guess. I don't know what to say about him. He's all over the place.
It's a lot to, I think at this point, it's hard to make comments about his behavior. It kind of just speaks for himself.
Yeah.
Julie Cunningham ran into him next. She's a 26-year-old ski instructor at a ski shop in Vail, Colorado. On March 15th, 1975, she left her apartment to go to a nearby tavern, but never arrived and was never seen or found again.
I remember what I wanted to say. What is his cooling off period?
So,
like, it was like once a week, or it was once a month, and then it was like every other week, and then we're back to like a month, and now November, March.
Yeah, so let's see, because he was doing once a month, then he murdered twice in June. Only 10 days apart. Then he got Jan and Denise, and that was in July. Then he moved and started up again. Yeah, he started up again in October, but in October he killed Nancy Wilcox on October 2nd. He killed Melissa Smith somewhere around the 18th of October, but I think she was one of the ones that they thought that she was held because they didn't find her body for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Then he took Laurie and Amy in on Halloween. Then we have November 8th, where he attempted abductions, then grabbed Deborah Kent. So that's November. Then we have Karen Campbell in January. Because, you know, you need to take the holiday off.
Right. But then March.
And now we're going into March.
So it seemed like he was like this fast. And then he got real faster. And now he's spacing them out again.
I feel like because, at least for Jan and Denise, because he took such a big risk of taking two women literally from the same place 4 hours apart, he was able to enjoy that longer than all the other ones. And also, he probably needed to, like, he was smart enough to know that he needed to, like, chill. Because now they had, like, they had a description of him. He had a lot of witnesses. And, like, prior to this, he was taking people with, like, in the middle of the night without any, like, witnesses, really. He took them, like, literally, like, in broad daylight.
Yeah. On a beach.
Yeah. Then he moved, and, you know, you gotta get settled.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. Moving is an ordeal. Yeah.
It's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he kind of, like, waxes and wanes. But, where was I? Julie Cunningham. So she is a 26-year-old ski instructor at a ski shop in Vail, Colorado.
Oh, yeah. She has a little star next to her name.
Hmm?
She has a star next to her name?
I don't know what that was for.
Okay.
But she was taken on the 15th of March and was never seen again. So now we're in March. Next, we're going to be in April. Denise Lynn Oliverson was a 24-year-old living in Grand Junction, Colorado. On April 6, 1975, Denise and her husband had gotten in an argument, so Denise decided to take a bike ride to her parents' house to cool down, but she never arrived. When she didn't come home that night, her husband assumed she just stayed at her parents' to kind of just sleep it off. Her bike and sandals were found under a viaduct near a railroad bridge near the Colorado River. And it's believed that her body was dumped in the Colorado River.
Oh.
Yeah. Lynette Dawn Culver was 12 when she was last seen in Pocatello, Idaho. She was taken on May 6, 1975. She had left school during her lunch break and then boarded a bus. And Bundy is suspected strongly suspected. He also later, like, confessed to murdering a girl that matched Lynette's description. And he claims that, he discarded her remains in Snake River, but they were never found. In June, we have Susan Curtis. She was a 15-year-old living in Bountiful, Utah, which, side note, Bountiful, Utah sounds like a beautiful place. It's a beautiful name.
It sounds bountiful.
Susan had a history of running away from home, but she'd always return after a few days. June 27th, 1975, she rode her bike to Provo, Utah, to attend the Bountiful Orchard Youth Conference in Brigham Young University, which lasted about 2 days. On the evening of the first day, a formal banquet was held at the Wilkinson Student Center. She excused herself from the banquet to walk to her dorm to brush her teeth, but never returned. They somehow determined that she likely never arrived to her dorm room as her toothbrush was dry. And Bundy later claimed that he buried her aside a nearby highway, but she has also still not, never been found. So,
how long after she was kidnapped was she, like, did the police look for her?
I don't know. The toothbrush comment, is that what you're going on about? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know.
Because if it was, like, a week later, oh, the toothbrush is gone.
Yeah, I don't know.
It has to have been, like, within an hour or so. Otherwise, they wouldn't have mentioned it.
So, he's really enjoying his time in Utah and Colorado and all these states.
It's beautiful and bountiful.
Yeah. He was pulled over on August 16th, 1975, in Granger, Utah. Excuse me. By a highway patrol officer who was suspicious of his vehicle because it was in his neighborhood. Ted's vehicle was parked on the side of the road with his lights out, and when the trooper flashed his lights, Ted took off, but eventually pulled over. He was arrested for evading an officer, and they found some sketchy things in his car.
Oh, like what?
You know, just burglary tools, a crowbar, a face mask, rope, handcuffs. You know,
huge.
Yeah. He was arrested for the evading the officer, and then also possession of these
weird tools. Shit.
Yeah. He was released on bail, but over the next few weeks, the police kept an eye on him. Bundy sold his car in September 1975, so literally the next month, and the police seized it from the new buyer. Inside, they found hair that could be traced to multiple women, and they actually sent the car to, like, the FBI to get, like, fully, like, worked on.
Could you imagine if you bought a car and, like, the police came and were like, we're going to take it?
I'd be pissed.
Yeah, I'd be like, I just paid for it. Do I get reimbursed or?
No. During this time, if you remember in Seattle, Kings County had a task force. And over the last 13 months, they were combing through all of the leads and information they had. And now this is the 70s, so they're working with a lot of, like, paper trails and everything. But somebody had an idea to make use of a payroll computer to digest and sort through the mass amount of data, which they had names of victims' classmates, names of names in their address books, names of all the suspects, all the registered VW owners, and more, probably all the Teds in the area as well. Ted Bundy and about 25 other men's names appeared more than four times throughout the data. So, like, Ted was in that suspect pool. So when Ted got arrested in Utah, Kings County received a call from Utah informing them that they had him arrested and found all this crap in there. So they started communicating.
Ooh, love that.
So after Ted was arrested, he was released on bail. They brought him back in October of 1975 and put Ted in a lineup so that DeRouche can identify him as the fake officer that tried to lure her away from the mall. She positively. Yeah. Identified him. I'm just so excited. She positively identified him as the man that tried to abduct her and assault her, and he was arrested and processed. He eventually, though, was set out on bail, which is kind of stupid.
It's not like he's in danger.
No. In November of that year, 30 investigators from five different states met to kind of all cooperate cases about Ted. They strongly suspected that he was the murderer of all of them and finally started pulling information and evidence together in order to prove what he was. So Ted's out on bail, but his trial started in February of 1976. This is the trial for Carol DeRouche. He waived his right to a jury trial, so that just makes the judge have to be like, you're guilty or not. Keep going. One more. Oh, that's his vehicle. Go to the next page, too. Because the fun thing, too, is he did something to his passenger seat.
Did he remove it?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. That was my guess when I saw it not there, so.
That could mean anything.
So the guy who bought this was like, cool, I don't need a passenger seat.
I hate when people ride next to me.
Well, because it's always so hard to get in the back. That is the lineup. You can see Ted on the end.
Can you?
Yeah.
Which one is he?
He's second from the right. What do you mean?
The one with his pants pulled all the way up to his nipples?
I've never met him, so I didn't recognize
second
him
second from the right.
Both of the guys on the right have their pants pulled way up to the same height.
He's second from, yes, him.
Sorry, that's I'm distracted by the sweater vest crew.
It's the 70s.
They do look like the 70s.
This guy was mid-blink.
Well,
why is this one standing like this?
He don't know.
He's trying not to let his hands touch the guys next to him, and he's like.
But oh, he looks like he's like, just put the cuffs on me right now.
I'm enjoying that you guys are having fun with this photo.
Uh-huh.
It is the 70s.
Why is this guy holding a sign?
I always have one of them hold it.
For posterity. go to the next photo for me. So that's Carol testifying. So do you think, what do you think his trial, like, wielded? Do you think he was guilty or not guilty?
I don't know, but, I like the judge looking super chill.
I know it was mentioned before that he escapes jail at some point. Custody.
Maybe.
So, now that they've got him, that's what I'm waiting for. I'm like,
well, I mean, like, let's review the evidence. She positively identified him. And they found a bunch of shit in his car.
Circumstantial.
But it's not a jury trial. So the judge knows all the rules and shit. I'm gonna say guilty. Just because I know that he is.
Lacey?
I'm going to say not guilty, to be contrary.
Oh. Lacey, you're wrong. He was found guilty. He was found guilty of aggravated kidnapping. He was sentenced to a minimum, which I think this minimum is bullshit, minimum of 1 year to a max of 15 years in Utah State Prison.
That's a range.
How? You get charged with aggravated kidnapping, and they're like, you only need like a minimum a year to reform.
It'll probably be fine.
It wasn't that aggravated.
You're right. It could have been worse.
Yeah.
While he was in Utah's jail, he was charged with the murder of Karen Campbell in Colorado, and then was transferred to prison in Aspen, Colorado.
Ooh, Aspen.
Aspen. So, May 1977, he pled not guilty to Campbell's murder. On June 7th, 1977. Hey. I know.
It's Bailey's birthday.
I know. Bundy was working with his defense team because, you know, he is going to law school through all this, so he thinks he's a lawyer.
I'm pretty sure he is.
Yeah, he's so smart.
Basically a lawyer, just like how I'm basically a doctor.
And I'm basically a vet.
And Lacey's basically
a headmaster.
Literate.
I like that.
Did you say illiterate?
No, I said basically literate.
She's basically Shakespeare.
She's basically, I don't know.
She's basically like Jane Austen.
Ooh.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That feels like too much of a...
No, how is that too much?
It's just the theme here.
She's basically a babysitter.
You're going the wrong direction.
She's basically a preschool teacher. Anyway. So while he was working with his defense team as counsel, he was granted access to the Picton County Jailhouse Law Library. Ooh. Now, it's also important to know that the jail is under the courthouse, so it's not super secure. If you want to go to the next picture, I think I have a picture of the jail.
I mean, our the courthouse in the town closest or near me, bless you. Yeah, I mean, there's a metal detector.
Yeah, so that's the building. It has the jail and the courts and the library. So eventually he, like, because he's charismatic, like, he's polite to the guards, he eventually is allowed into the library unshackled, with kind of limited supervision. On June 7th, the guard was outside the room. I think he took a phone call or something, or was talking with somebody. So Bundy seized this opportunity to escape. He decided to jump from the second story window of the building, 25 feet above ground, and run away, pretty much.
He landed like a superhero, I bet.
No, he didn't. He broke his ankle in the fall.
So he hobbled away.
Yes. Yeah. He fucked up his leg.
Nice.
He still managed to evade the police for like 5 to 6 days. He ended up stealing a car, breaking into a camping trailer for supplies, until two police officers spotted him and apprehended him. At this point, they were like, you know what? We can't send you back to that jail because
you found
already broke out of it once. So they sent him to a facility in Glenwood Springs, Colorado, which was supposed to be more modern and more secure.
I feel like it wasn't.
He also gained charges with escape, burglary, and felony theft. He's just racking charges at this point. So that was in June. Now, December of that year, his lawyer visited him at one point and noticed that he was losing quite a bit of weight, approximately 30 pounds, because, you know, stress. But Bundy found that the ventilation system in his cell was actually just a grate, specifically a 12-inch square grate, and was under the second floor jailer's apartment. So that little grate in the ceiling. Yeah. So on December 30th, 1977, he developed a plan for when the jailer was out, he would climb through that opening in the ceiling and escape. And that's what he did. He managed to get into the jailer's apartment, make sure it was empty, change into the jailer's clothes, and walked pretty much right out of the front door of the prison.
It's embarrassing.
It wouldn't have been discovered that he had escaped for 15 hours. Which is a lot of time.
I feel like that's one of those situations where, like, someone probably got in trouble for that.
I would hope somebody would get in trouble for that.
Like, that feels like if you were the one to figure it out, you wouldn't want to go and tell your boss because you were just like,
he's
been gone for a long time.
When is it? You know, it's... seen him yesterday. Oh, fuck, guys.
Shit. You know what's especially like terrible? To be the governor of Colorado and lose him fucking twice.
I mean, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice.
Damn it.
Shame on you again. Don't
look That's like rude. Yourself.
But that is where I'm going to leave you guys for part two.
I didn't know that there was a part three.
He's just on a lamb.
Yeah, I mean, I could have probably gotten in two parts, but we would have been here for like 2 hours.
Fine.
Sorry. He's not done yet on his tour through the country.
This is... Bundy escapes, crawls through the roof of his cell. That's silly. Like, why is he able to do that?
Because he dropped 30 pounds and decided to fit through it. What? It's like a cockroach.
Which came first, do you think? The weight loss or the vent?
I think he saw the vent and was like, this is how I'm going to get out of here.
Very motivating.
Yeah.
Like that it says... law enforcement officials began an immediate search.
After 15 hours
later.
Once they figured out that he wasn't there.
They didn't know. The other fun thing is, too, that the, if you go back to the picture of his cell, plop back a little bit.
This one?
Yeah. You see all the books on the bed?
Yeah.
He made it look like he was sleeping with those.
Oh my god.
Oh my god. So embarrassing.
But, like, the cell is kind of weirdly set up.
Yeah, like, it kind of gives you, like, a hiding spot.
Yeah, is this, like, a shower or something?
I don't know.
It looks like it.
They wouldn't have a shower in their own cell, right?
He doesn't deserve to bathe.
Maybe they did then. Or maybe, like, that's a thing this prison did.
Is it a closet?
He doesn't deserve a closet.
I don't think they have closets. I don't know. I didn't think they got showers in the cells either. Maybe this jail had a lot of people getting, like, murdered in the showers, and they're like, all right, let's split them up.
No.
Everybody gets your own.
He should allow to have that risk. Yeah, so we'll be going into his grand finale. It's coming to an end. The law is catching up to him, as we can see. And then like, the other
getting away.
We can't blame Colorado, okay? Utah and Seattle, Utah and Washington know what he is. Colorado's just being dumb right now.
Okay. Well, that was sinister.
And we were sarcastic.
And we hope you keep listening.